On this episode of Secrets of Home Building, Pat Cardone interviews appraiser Terry Pope to discuss the steps and processes that take place when it comes to appraising your property, whether it be a custom home build or an investment property.
Hi, this is Pat Cardone with SG Home Builders, and this is our series, Secrets of Home Building. I'm with Terry Pope with Citywide Real Estate Services. And Terry has been running an appraisal company in the north side of the city for how many years now, Terry?
I started off doing this in 2003, part-time, full-time about a year after that, so since 2004.
Since 2004, so that's when you took it on as on your own and you started bringing in people under you as well.
Yeah, exactly.
So this has been quite a trip then.
It's been quite a trip. We've seen the highs and the lows, definitely.
Well, what kind of numbers did you start out with, say, per year of appraisals?
You know what? As a typical appraiser, a one-man shop doing your own appraisals, you'd be lucky if you can do a couple a day, and a lot of things have changed in the industry. It was a lot easier to do volume back in the day.
Right.
You can just crank them out like an assembly line.
Right.
And given the changes in the industry, legislation, what the lenders are asking of us in our appraisal reports, it's harder to do the volume that we used to do.
Right.
So, you know, back in the day, you can crank out as a one-man shop, you can do one or two a day easily, even
right.
more.
Right.
But it's become harder. It's become harder to meet those kind of numbers again.
Yeah, and you know, it's funny. Since we started about, 12, 13 years ago doing the investment side of this, I've seen changes, I mean, when we started, it was like the collapse had just happened, and all of a sudden, FHA and the lenders are saying, okay, you need sales within the last 90 days when everything was foreclosing.
Right?
I mean, there's just no comps, which was like, I'm amazed. There's a lot of guys didn't make it through this whole thing. I mean,
yeah.
I know you guys actually did fairly well during all of this, right?
We did fairly well. One of the main reasons why is that the majority of our clients didn't have to switch over to a different format that a lot of the big banks had to switch over to.
Right.
In other words, large banks, Chase, Citi, Fifth Third, Bank of America, they had to switch over to a format where they were using appraisal management companies. They implemented a middleman, a third party. And
that was simply deniability, right?
Exactly.
Take collusion out of the question. That big word that goes around nowadays.
Right. So a lot of appraisers out there who had all their eggs in those big bank baskets, when these banks had to switch over to using AMCs, appraisal management companies, they lost books of business decades old.
Right.
And fortunately, we didn't have all our eggs in those baskets. So we were able to, we had a good book of business, a good book of clients who didn't have to use appraisal management companies. So they were able to keep us on.
They were smaller mid-level lenders?
Yeah, smaller mid-level lenders.
Or more brokerage lenders?
Brokerage lenders, yep, exactly. The mom-and-pa banks
who
were able to maintain their own internal roster of preferred appraisers.
Right.
Brokers or bankers that you hear of.
Right.
And in addition to that, non-lender work.
Yeah.
Divorce appraisals,
right. Oh, yeah.
Tax appeal,
oh, yeah.
Estate planning.
Oh yeah.
So we're always trying to diversify and not put all our eggs in the lender work basket like a lot of appraisers tend to do.
Right.
The reality is that's where the majority of the volume is.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, yeah, that's where it's like a machine.
Yeah, exactly.
But there's a lot more regulation. I know those guys complain a lot that it's, they got to jump through these hoops. And
a lot of eyes on those appraisal reports. Underwriters.
How about blowback from you from all that whole period? Because I know that good friends of mine who are appraisers, banks were trying to shove these things back at you 10 years later. Saying, look what you did here. There's no way.
Yep.
How did you justify this 10 years later? I mean, come on.
It is. It's happening left and right. The whole buyback phenomenon is a big problem in the industry.
Yeah.
A lot of appraisers are getting sued left and right for appraisals they did, like you said, 10 years ago.
Right.
And it's a matter of a lot of banks running into problems, giving loans to maybe non-qualified buyers.
Mm-hmm.
But even qualified buyers, it fell on hard times. Property went into foreclosure. The bank wants to go after somebody for that loss, and
it's more their insurance company, isn't it, than the bank itself. It's
what they're doing is they're going after the appraiser's errors and omissions, insurance.
Right.
So we're one of the few people, maybe the only people, throughout along the chain of the loan process that maintains and carries any type of policy.
Yeah.
Any type of policy.
Yeah, absolutely.
Loan officers, they don't care anything like that.
They can wash their hands.
They wash their hands of it, right. So when a bank's on the hook for selling a property at a big loss, they're looking to come after someone for that. So
right.
So there's big, there are big, there are law firms that are, it happened a few years ago, I can't remember the name of the law firm out of Texas, but they were suing appraisers left and right.
Right.
For properties that went into foreclosure, you know,
right.
5, 6, 7, 10 years right. ago. And we're only responsible, we're only required to maintain a work file for 5 years.
Right.
Right. And
absolutely.
And, yeah.
So, my garage is filled with files, but I got to dump all this
yeah,
stuff.
You know, you
gotta
as you
get
see,
the shredder out.
I've got banker's boxes everywhere. Yeah. These are I'm holding my files for as long as I'm around because you never know what's going
to
happen.
Well, it's funny. I only hold on to the ones that I know that might be trouble after. After the period
right, right.
over, it's like, oh, there might have been something, you know, or somebody came up with something. It's like, okay. I mean, it happens. We're a litigious society, and it's like, unfortunately,
right.
you guys are the lowest paid in the whole process.
Yes.
You know, you and the attorneys, right? Which is weird. You guys make similar money per closing.
We are the lowman on the totem pole, no doubt. We are the lowman on the totem pole, and unfortunately, we carry most of the liability. So we're seeing a lot of buybacks in the industry right now. So they're coming after us for appraisals we may have done, you know, 5, 6, 7, 8, 10 years ago, and those appraisals may have been great.
Yeah.
And they may have been solid, but the market tanked. And
but this is what I think buyers don't understand, that you guys are the ones with your licenses on the risk.
Exactly.
It's no one else.
Right.
It really
exactly.
is no, unless it's out and out fraud.
Right.
You know, you are the guy, only ones that the bank's going to come back at and say, why did you let this go through?
Sure, exactly.
You know, and to me, that was just so unfair. You know, I mean.
Yeah, I mean, generally speaking, in the loan process, anyone who's got a commission on the line, they just want to
just get
hammer through, get closed,
and
they really just want the appraisal to be done at a high value, at purchase price, as quickly as possible. And they're really not taking into, unfortunately, the majority of the players out there aren't taking into account the appraiser's livelihood and license. And it's becoming problematic where a lot of appraisals a lot of volume out there is being done by appraisers who unfortunately don't really value their license and their livelihood.
Right.
And it's a recipe for disaster when you're trying to meet the numbers and do the volume that some of these clients are asking of you. It's inevitable that
you're
going to have
problems. Especially like this ties into what I do with construction. People pushing these numbers higher and higher and higher and higher. And it's like, you know, there is limits even in these even in a market as good as Chicago.
Absolutely. We're seeing that a lot where we're seeing a lot of buyers not really taking value into consideration.
Yeah.
It seems like the majority of buyers, at least I speak on the Chicago market that I see, I think a lot of these buyers are buying on their monthly payment, whether or not they can afford it. And they're really not taking value into account. And especially in condominiums where you have comparable sales, very recent, cut and dry, they're very similar.
It should be straightforward,
but these buyers are coming in and they're paying higher than very recent sales in the building. And I think they have...
Where does that culture come from?
You know what? I think they have different motivations.
Well, I mean, obviously, I think realtors are feeding it as well.
Absolutely. And, you know, the listing agent, the way I see it, when a property goes under contract for higher than anything else, I think the listing agent did their job, but they should expect to maybe run into issues when it comes to the appraisal.
Absolutely.
And if there's anyone to point the finger at, I think it might be the buyer's agent. The buying agent is steering their clients, their buyers, towards a purchase which may be above market value.
Right.
And
that's the fiduciary responsibility.
Exactly.
That's where it's supposed
to
kick in, right?
And too oftentimes, I see buyers really, really pushing their clients to purchase a property even if it's above market value. In particular, I see a lot of escalation clauses in contracts these days, which in essence, it's kind of a gray area because the real estate agent...
Explain that escalation clause.
Yeah, so it's a gray area in the sense that the real estate agent, the buying agent, or the real estate or the listing agent, whoever drafts these clauses, is kind of acting as an attorney when they maybe shouldn't be. So basically an escalation clause says, it's an agreement between the buyer and the seller that says, you know, if a buyer decides to buy a property, they'll sign an escalation clause saying that they will pay X amount above the next and highest offer, the highest and best offer. So if I come in and offer $500,000 on a property and someone else has an escalation clause saying they will automatically offer $3,000 more than that, then they just keep they just keep outbidding.
I always thought those were phony in the even in the bank REO sales division where they'd have, you know, here's your
right.
You know, just put your automatic bid in and just keep going up and up and up yeah. and up and up. And it's funny, I've got a buddy who's from Milwaukee area, and he does auction sales for like Associated.
Yeah.
And they love it, you know, because it creates what it's almost false competition.
Exactly. Exactly. You know, and sometimes it's kind of the thrill of the chase. You're out bidding one another, and you're trying to get your hands on the property. Buyers have different motivations,
right?
And you know, a lot of buyers are with, especially earlier in the year in the springtime. We've seen over the past couple of years when you've got low inventory and high demand.
You'll see 5%, 7% jumps in value.
Yeah,
and that's crazy.
It's crazy. You know, it is crazy because 5 to 7% over a year, maybe that's a healthy rate of appreciation.
Yes.
But when you start to see that within a matter of literally days or weeks sometimes, then, you know, you start to talk about bubble and what's
right.
going on with
that. Well, I mean, I know that, you know, all the projects we've done, I always would ask, I had an appraiser that I always used to help with you know, questions. And you know, I would always ask him, beginning of the year, what's Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac's guidance for the year? What's FHA's guidance for the year? What do they see as growth? Because I figure that's the growth for the year.
Sure.
They say it's 3%. Okay, you figure maybe you'll get 1% in spring, maybe creep up another point in summertime, and maybe by the end of the year you'll hit that point.
Right.
But they, I mean, there was people just trying to, I'll take 6 now.
Yeah,
you know?
Right,
it's
right.
like you're going like, holy, how are they going to keep this together?
Yeah.
You know, and I see this, especially in the construction side now, is people overpaying for properties, then trying to squeeze in full gut rehabs or whatever and trying to make it work, either like what we did for years, doing it for profit and to keep and to build a business.
Sure.
But even buyers coming in trying to make it fit under market value.
Right, right.
And because they seem to be more than willing because of this escalation, I believe, and people overbidding. Then the prices just keep going up and up and up. Where I see this stuff's kind of flat in some of these markets in the north side right now.
Absolutely, I agree. You know, I think a lot of buyers out there have a similar mentality to buyers back in 06, 07, 08, prior to the crash, where they thought that despite overpaying for a property, the market's appreciating, we're in a hot market, so it's okay, I'll be okay.
Right.
But the reality is, like you said, things are starting to level off.
Yeah.
Especially in Chicago, we have a market where values spike and decrease based on seasons, based on lot, there are lots of different factors.
Yeah.
You know, you can buy a property in the spring, and it may go down 5 to 10% by winter.
Yeah.
A lot of buyers, you know,
they may
freak out and worry, but hopefully it goes up over time. That's the end goal of real estate.
And the crazy part of that is then you get all the people in the neighborhood seeing that number, and they're going, well, now my house is worth, especially, you know, the multi-units. Wait a minute, mine's worth that $1 million that I haven't done anything in all these years. It's like, you know, it's crazy in some ways. So investment, let's talk about construction and stuff like that and appraising. What do you see long-term? How's this going to play out? I mean, you think that, I know that there's guys who came in, like your Barnett Capitals, who bought 120, 152 flats, are going to turn into homes and whatever. What are you seeing? Are you seeing the stuff trickle out? I know there's shortages right now.
Yeah, you know, I still see a big demand for new construction, for gut rehab properties, especially in the north side of the city. There's near north to far north side of the city, there's still a big demand for single family homes. In particular, new construction and gut rehabs. After a certain price point, I'm seeing a lot of properties start to cool off. I think the sweet spot for a lot of young couples with families, ideally, is under $1 million, but you know, that's hard to come by in that good neighborhood in the city for a single family home.
Yeah.
I see a lot of properties that are priced over about $1.5 million starting to sit longer than ever.
Right.
Lincoln Park is one neighborhood in particular where you go back to the spring of this year or last year, and a property was on the market for a minute before it was swept up, even if it was listed above market value, as long as it was in a sweet spot of the price range, which I see about between about $1 million to $1.5 million.
Right.
Now those properties are sitting a little longer on the market. The marketing time has definitely increased for a lot of those properties. I think it's a seasonal thing also. I think in the springtime, like most agents say, after the Super Bowl, the market really turns around
really
and picks up.
Really
it really crunch. Does.
You know, and that's funny for us. It's like timing the business to build stuff to have it ready for spring market is a pain.
That's huge.
It's hard.
Yeah.
You know, because there's so many factors that are coming in. I mean, you want to get a curb cut in the city, it takes longer than you think, guys. If you've got to get a curb cut, you got to do something special. You need some sort of zoning change. You need some sort of, you know, just administrative change.
Sure.
It all takes time.
And there is a sweet spot in the spring. There's a sweet spot. There's a small window. If you hit it right, you've got huge demand.
You've got huge demand. Everybody coming out of that winter lull. And
right, exactly, exactly. And if you miss that window, your property may sit a little longer.
Yeah.
And I'm seeing a lot of listings being canceled and relisted in the spring.
Oh yeah. Absolutely. I mean, to me, it's like it's almost better if you're going to have something finish in the late fourth quarter. Hold it.
Right.
Don't even burn the market time.
Yeah.
Pay the interest, move on.
Yeah, because if it sits through the fall and winter and people just come around and kick the tires, they think, and they ask, why has it been listed so long? You know, it's got some kind of
It's everywhere. These listing days are everywhere nowadays.
You know?
I mean, there is, which is great. I like the transparency, you know, because then we're all looking at the same thing. It's not like anybody's, you know, hiding behind the mirror. So tell me, investment side.
Sure.
What's your interpretation of when you look at properties? I know you do some investment work.
Yeah, so as a residential appraiser, you're licensed to appraise up to 4 units. So a lot of our business is 2 to 4 units. And we are seeing a lot of investors, whether or not they may be wary of the stock market or what have you, but a lot of investors are flocking lately towards real estate. And we're seeing a lot of investors sweeping up these 2 to 4 unit properties that are a good percent of return. At the end of the day, with these 2 to 4 units, it seems like most people are almost functioning like a commercial property where they're trading at a cap rate. And we're seeing a lot of these a pretty big demand for multi-unit properties in good neighborhoods in the city, given how high the rents have gone lately. So you know, over the past couple of years in Chicago, the rents have gone through the roof. And a lot of investors are taking advantage of that, and they're buying up these multi-units, and that come already with tenants in place, and they're sprucing them up a little bit, hiking up the rents, and getting a really good return, and ultimately maybe selling them for a profit. And we're also seeing some big investors coming around buying single-family homes, condominiums, multi-units, and just acquiring a large portfolio of investment properties. Increasing the rents with the end goal being to sell off that entire portfolio at a cap rate to a large investor. So we're seeing a lot of that.
Right. Yeah, people just get them filled up and sell them as a bulk.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. So you work with investors then, obviously, as well, right?
Sure.
Okay. Yep. So when you work with investors, what's the formula that you use to help them see what makes sense to them?
Yeah, so if we're doing an appraisal for an investment property, whether or not it's a single family or multi-unit, there are a couple approaches to value in the appraisal. The typical approach we use is a sales comparison approach, which is basically your value is based off of recent comparable sales in the area. But these investors want to see an income approach to value. So that's when we add a little more information to our report. We determine rental comparables, and we determine an income approach to value. And that's what these investors are looking for. They basically want to see what's their return on this investment. So when doing appraisals for a bank typically, or divorce or estate planning, it's not often they want to see an income approach to value.
Right.
But with investors, it's different. They don't care as much about sales comparison. They want to see income approach.
Right.
So that's what we provide. Yeah. And it's a numbers game at the end of the day for investors.
Yeah.
And they do take value into consideration. You know, a good investor obviously should. But it's a numbers game, and they want to see what their return is. And they have a good idea, a good grasp generally on the marketplace and whether or not they're getting a decent deal.
Right.
And but at the end of the day, they want good returns.
Right. So let's just say someone looking to buy and to tear something down and build. Do you help people from the front end, say on the buyer side, let's say if a buyer, because you know what, I mean, the point is I see a lot of people overpaying.
Sure.
And then trying to squeeze construction into something and, you know, and end up having to do things in phases.
Right.
Which
right.
is tough, right? Yeah. Because you're projecting out, here's the projected cost of this construction project, and then they add stuff, and then they're over budget, and then their loan's out, and then they got to scramble for more money, or the bank's got to I mean, there's lots of things that can go screwy.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, when we're doing appraisals for or consulting for investors, one of the first thing we'll do is a highest and best use analysis.
Right.
So, you know, if it's a situation of a teardown, we have to look into zoning, and we'll work with the investor and say, you know, what are your plans? Are you looking to develop this property to sell off? Are you looking to tear down the single family home and build it as condos? Well, if that's the case, let's take a look at zoning. What does zoning allow? How many units can you squeeze into this piece of land? And can you get approval for an extra unit to be squeezed in? If you think so, you know, here's what your net might be. Here's at least what your gross might be. They'll know the construction costs better than we, but at least we'll be able to tell them, you know, you're looking at this single family home in Lincoln Park. The zoning is X. It allows for four units. Here's what you could potentially sell those four units for. And we'll look at other scenarios where developers have done that. And that's what a lot of these investors are looking to do. They see a lot of these up and coming investors and developers, because there's a lot of players in that game, as you know. And a lot of investors and
a lot of money in Chicago.
There is a lot of money in Chicago, absolutely. And I'm seeing a lot of foreign money come in. Mm-hmm. I think Chicago is relatively cheap when it comes to global cities. I consider Chicago a major global city. And when it comes to real estate, I still think Chicago is relatively cheap. And I think other foreign investors are seeing that. And
I've definitely run into national, you know, out of state buyers, absolutely investors.
Yeah, so you know, we'll do a highest and best use analysis for these investors and try to determine what their best play is on this piece of dirt that may be buying.
Right.
Whether or not to develop it to single family or condominiums or, you know, a multi-unit building.
Right. Well, cool. How do people get a hold of you if they want to use you? I mean, because you do work for independent people.
Absolutely. We're doing a lot of independent appraisals these days. A lot of sellers out there thinking about putting their property on the market. They come to us I think that is
the best possible idea.
Because, you know, as a typical seller, you may interview a couple of realtors and they may give you their BPOs and you may have 5-7 different values and I don't know where to begin. And oftentimes, which is unfortunate, we'll see a lot of these listing agents just list low.
Yeah.
And because they know they'll sell it quickly. And the buyers,
which is a marketing ploy.
Exactly.
I sold this in one day.
Right. So if the seller's not really aware of the true market value of the property, they're ecstatic by the fact that their property sold in 3 days, but they may not realize that they could have gotten,
well, they might have lost 50, 60, 70,000.
Exactly. But they're focusing on the fact that the realtor was really good, quote, good, because they sold the property so quickly.
Right.
So we're working with a lot of buyers, and I think generally speaking, the consumers have become more educated, and with Zillow and Redfin and other sources out there.
Let's get into that real quick before we end. What do you think about all the Zillows and all of that?
I'm not a fan. Most appraisers aren't a fan of these sites. As a consumer, if I take my appraiser hat off and I'm looking at it as a consumer, I think they're good because, you know, as a consumer, you don't have MLS access.
Right.
You're not necessarily maybe working with a realtor if you're just a homeowner, you want to get a general idea of what your property is worth. I think they're a good tool for homeowners to get a general idea of activity in your neighborhood, but I think they can also be very misleading.
Yeah.
I know there was a big lawsuit recently here in Chicago where a seller was suing Zillow because the seller could not get certain, basically their property, they had it listed for X and Zillow was saying it's worth Y, which is a lot less.
Right.
So everyone coming along was saying your property is priced too high based on Zillow. And Zillow was just way off in the valuation. And unfortunately, that case got dismissed. A lot of appraisers out there were hoping that...
They were hoping that
maybe Zillow would have had to adhere to some of the state laws that basically say if you're...
Well, aren't they just using an automatic value system?
Yeah, exactly. They have algorithms and they are really trying to hone it. I've heard that they're really trying to narrow down valuation to the point where they can even analyze photos and see if you've got granite and if you've got stainless, they're going to, you know, put your property into a certain category. So their technology is very, very powerful, very powerful. So, you know, it's a lot of appraisers out there are worried that maybe big data will take away our jobs. But as a consumer, to answer your question, I think Zillow and Redfin are good tools to use. But at the end of the day, if you really want to know what your property is worth, you should hire a certified state certified appraiser. And
I don't think appraisers are going to go away. I just think there's too many gray areas.
In some capacity, they'll need us. And even if a lot of the lender work goes away, because Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac have introduced no appraisal loans recently.
I've seen that.
And a lot of appraisers are a bit worried about it, but there's enough work to go around.
Yeah.
There aren't many of us.
No, I know.
And no one's really coming into the business, that's for sure.
No, I mean, you're probably one of the younger guys I've seen. I mean, when it comes down to the guys who own these things, most of them are a little long in the tooth.
You know, in Illinois, the average age of an appraiser is almost 60.
Wow.
And most of whom are getting out of the business.
Yeah.
And very few appraisers are coming into the business. So those of us who stick around will have to try to handle the volume. And despite Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac doing...
It's funny, you'll almost become like the surveyors.
Right, sure.
You don't see a ton of them, but you know what?
Yeah, no,
everybody
right.
uses them.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. So hopefully, you know, we stick around for a long time. I think those who stick around will do just fine. And I think eventually there'll be a new influx of appraisers. As it is now, not many people are coming into the industry.
Yeah.
But I think we'll see a new wave of people coming into the industry.
That's good.
I think more and more clients are slowly starting to respect us a little more and our livelihood and our careers.
Yeah.
And I'm seeing some appraisal fees starting to creep back up a little bit. For a while, they took a dive.
Yeah, they did. That was when the management system came in.
Yeah, exactly.
The guys are getting haircuts right
and left. Right, exactly.
Same stress, same work, same risk, less money.
Yeah, those management
Great
companies
system,
have
huh?
to pay the bills. Yeah, exactly. So, and you know what? We're also seeing a lot of the big banks going away from that system.
Yeah.
I think it was Flagstar Bank just recently announced that they're going to no longer use AMCs.
Yeah.
And there's a trend going away from AMCs because I think the big banks in the system has just realized that they weren't all they were cracked up to be.
No.
And a lot of there's been a big backlash from appraisers because, like you said, they're skimming off the top and we're not making the fees we used to. So as a result, they're not getting the quality of the product that they used to get.
And you're not getting the quality of service.
Absolutely.
You know,
yeah.
I mean, why deliver? So once again, give me your contact info so people can get a hold of you. I mean, the number one, I got to tell you, I think that the success of our business was driven by the ability to work with the appraisers. Our ability to get at 475, some now we're at 480 something homes we've done in the last. So it's because knowing the market, working, having an appraiser who helped us off and on. You know, not most
probably
only 10% of the deals that were weird. You know, but it's like, you know, it's all about market knowledge.
Yeah, absolutely. I couldn't agree with you more.
Yeah, so give us your contact.
So, my name is Terry Pope. The company is Citywide Real Estate Services. My email address is terry@citywide-appraisals.com. My phone number is 773-791-2123.
Thank you so much, Terry. Talk to you soon.
Thanks for listening. If you'd like additional information on how you can build or remodel your own custom project, you can visit us at sghomebuilders.com. Have a great day.